Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Mythic Gaming with Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings and welcome, Tim and Zach. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Very busy. My days are kind of blurring into each other.
Yeah, yep. Same with me as well. So it'll be nice to catch up for a little bit.
And Zach, how about with you? How are things going? Zach, if you can hear me, we can't hear you. Can you, if you can't communicate, try it again.
Can you hear me now?
Can hear you now. Yes, loud and clear. Welcome.
Sorry about that. Okay. Yeah, everything's going all well on this front.
And I'm looking forward to tonight because in addition to what's new and exciting, we are going to be starting a series on world building. And that I find very exciting.
Yeah, I drafted up a little bit to talk about, so I didn't have to do it off the cuff.
Okay, fantastic. We'll start with Tim because Tim is the owner and operator of Level One Games, and he's made his dream come true, and it's been flourishing even during the pandemic. He's the one with the pulse on what's going on in the gaming industry. So tell me, Tim, what is new and exciting in gaming?
Yeah, so there's been a bunch of stuff going on as usual, which is nice. It keeps us real busy and on our toes with a bunch of stuff. But yeah, there was a new Pokemon set that finally came out that everybody's been super excited for. I don't know how many months ago, but the new Pokemon game came out for Nintendo Switch. It was called Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. A brand new mainline series or a game for the series. So the trading card game version of that series finally came out. So we had Scarlet and Violet set number one for Pokemon finally came out. So that's been doing really well, and it kind of reinvigorated our Pokemon League that we do on Saturdays. So we've been doing like a Pokemon League is what it's called for people to come and play the trading card game in store, and do some battles and to prep for bigger tournaments and stuff. But I kind of figured that people were waiting for this new set to come out to see what new cards were going to be, in play and everything. And it seems to be that is the case. So our group has grown to, 8 or 12 people on Saturdays. So it's a nice group of people that comes, and it's been really fun. The game has been going in a really good direction. So even I made a deck, so I got to play a few games and everything.
Oh,
so
awesome.
It's been good. Yeah, and I've been playing Pokemon. Say that again?
Go ahead. Do the Pokemon games follow, like, thematic stories like the Magic the Gathering cards do?
Not so much for the trading card game, but in the video games, there's an overarching story for the for the game. But yeah, the cards are more of just its own thing for collectability and for the actual playing the game aspect of it. There are, certain Pokemon have an overarching type that, or like ability that kind of spans through the generations. So they're kind of connected that way, but doesn't seem no real story for the actual card game.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But speaking of that, it's a perfect segue because just this past weekend, the new Magic set released. And this one is called March of the Machines. And it's basically, think Avengers Endgame, but for Magic the Gathering.
Oh, wow.
So there's been an ongoing invasion of these creatures called Phyrexians from the plane New Phyrexia, where, they're like a hive mind kind of plane where everything is one. That's their thing. All will be one. So they've kind of been sending their big bads out through the different sets that have been coming out the past, year and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all been, the story has all been leading up to this set where the big final battle happens, and then you see who wins and who loses and who lives and who dies and everything. So people have been getting real excited for the story. So, you know, like I said, the set finally just came out this weekend. So we had our, you know, our big pre-release on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So that was a hit as usual, which was nice. But yeah, so the story, like I said, is the big Avengers Endgame aspect of it. So a lot of the big bads ended up dying, maybe, question mark. And, you know, some of the good guys are to normal and everything. So the story went in a not super predictable way, because there was a couple things that they did that were a bit of a surprise. But, you know, there's been some spoilers and stuff going around online, but not all were true. So it was good to be a little bit surprised.
That sounds like fun. And again, yes, it ties into what the Marvel is doing with what DC is now going to be doing, what the comic books have always done in one way or another. I find it very exciting, kind of break a lot of the boxes that we have inside our minds that separate one thing from another thing. Now they become something else. They reconfigure, and that's always exciting.
Yeah, exactly, and they've been trying to do some new stuff with, because you know in Magic there's the five different mana colors, and they were kind of in a box of what their abilities could do. So they've been kind of, you know, color changing some stuff and giving some colors things that they couldn't do previously. So, you know, stuff's always kind of changing and morphing, and they see what works and what doesn't work, but. They've been doing some good stuff recently as well.
Oh, fantastic. So even the fundamentals of Magic with the colors, they're starting to change. That is awesome.
Yeah, yep. That's kind of this set, too, kind of did that, where there was some abilities that were only tied to white and green creatures and spells, but now blue and red got them, which is really interesting. So it's... Yeah, you know, like I said, they've been changing some stuff, and it's been going well.
And how do they reconcile it with what people were like, who might be still playing with the old sets? You know, do their old cards change, or do the old cards retain the same abilities that they had in the past?
There's a couple times where they kind of. Not fully change the card, but it's called the Oracle Text. They kind of rework the Oracle Text to kind of modernize it a little bit. Because, you know, there's some words that are different but do the same thing in the new game. So now they kind of, it's the Oracle Text, and there's a website that you can go on to get, like, the most up-to-date versions. But you can still use them in some different formats and stuff that are played.
Okay. So Magic and Pokemon and all these card games offer, it's always evolving. It's always changing. It's never stale. It's always being reconfigured, and it's always bridging into genres and circumstances that you never thought to expect or experience. So it's very exciting.
Yeah. It's always it's been fun, especially the past couple of years with what they've been doing. So it's fun to see where they take it, and it'll be fun to see where they continue to take it.
Yes, it most certainly will. So that's cards, but Level One Games carries much more than cards. You carry video games, you carry board games, you carry RPGs, you carry videos and DVDs and things like that. What else is new and exciting?
We've gotten some new board games in. I haven't had a chance to try any of them yet. Zach, what was the name of the one that I just sent you the other day, yesterday?
Too Many Bones.
Too Many Bones. I've also been in one of our sales. But they call it like a dice-driven RPG game where you play solo and...
Tim, I'm losing you. Tim, I'm losing you.
I'm going to give him a text and see if maybe he gets that.
Okay.
Can you still hear me?
Now we can.
Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yes, much better.
Okay. Huh. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Where did I last leave off?
You were talking about we went past the card games and we're getting to the other types of games and you started breaking up around then. So anything after the
okay. The Too Many Bones, Zach said, was the one of the new board games that I got, but I haven't had a chance to play it, but I sent it to Zach. And was it something that you played or somebody that you knew had it, Zach?
No, I've seen reviews of it before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But on the front it says dice building RPG game, and it could be played as a solo, it seemed, and then also as a group too. So it's a big, I picked up the box, and the box is, you know, maybe 14 inches by 9 inches or so, and one of the most dense games I've picked up. It's probably 10, 15 pounds maybe. I think they said that there was over 100 dice in it and close to like 160 different cards and everything, so it was a very densely packed game. It was also pretty expensive too, but it seems like you're getting a decent value's worth.
Okay. And Zach, do you have any, like, based on your own experiences of the reviews that you read on the game?
It sounds like it's fun. It's supposed to be a bit rules heavy, but the company has this weird kind of, I guess you would say, gimmick, where pretty much every one of their games is waterproof. So instead of having any cardboard components, like the player mats and stuff are made of almost like a keyboard-esque material. They tend to use a lot of games that have dice and chips, like poker chip type things, but they like don't have cards most of the time. I don't really know like how that became their corner, but they've done like 3 or 4 games where that's their thing.
Yeah, I remember you talked about that on another show, that was somebody's thing, and I guess they're continuing with their thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to handy, if you're, you know, if you're sitting around the table or, you know, we've taken some games to some bars sometimes, you know, so it's a good feature. It's a nice feature sometimes.
So is there any other type of game coming out very soon along those lines?
I know I have some more board game stuff on pre-order too, but nothing comes immediately to mind. And there's nothing. Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, speaking of video games, the new Zelda is coming out in May. I'm not sure if you've been keeping up with that.
No, I haven't been.
Yeah, so it's the new Zelda Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom is what it's called. And it's the first time that it's a direct sequel to a Zelda game, actually. So it's a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild, which was the one that came out for the Nintendo Switch a couple of years ago. So it'll be interesting to see how they do a branching story between two games for the first time. I watched the first trailer, and I was like, okay, this looks cool. And then I'm not watching anything else about it until it comes out.
I remember that when it was out for the Atari 2600 years ago, maybe even earlier. And I remember on the Super Nintendo, and I remember it on the Nintendo 64, and then that's when I lost track of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've had a game on every Nintendo console that's come out, basically. And they're always... smash hits, and you know they always take their time with them and make sure that it's right, because the fandom is a huge. Zelda is one of the biggest IPs, especially for Nintendo. But they've always been good. All the Zelda games have been great.
Yeah, I think the last game I played was Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, that was the one for Nintendo 64.
Have any of the other really old, because we've talked in the past about Gauntlet, and Gauntlet kind of fizzled out. There was supposed to be one that came out, and then it was only available virtually. It did, a hard copy hadn't come out, and that's when I lost track of Gauntlet. But I followed Gauntlet from the first games in the video arcades till it came on the home systems, and I even had several different versions for several different home systems. And Dragon Warrior, that was something that lasted for quite a while.
Yeah, they were still making Dragon Warriors for a while. I forget what the most recent one is, but there's some for PS4, I think, still. So.
Okay.
But they're always still, a lot of companies are still coming up with new video games for older characters. Star Fox is still kind of around. Samus from Metroid. There was a new Metroid that just came out. Metroid Dread came out, 6 months ago. So they're still around and they're still popular. And luckily, most of the time, the games are still really good and fun and are nostalgic and reminiscent of the old stuff, but bring new modern sensibilities and better and. You can save easier and everything, so some more modern sensibilities to it.
Yeah, it sounds exciting, and I guess if a Gauntlet comes out again, I'll budget more time for computer games, or if something with Conan comes out, or Greek mythology.
Yeah, the Nintendo Switch would be such a perfect thing for Gauntlet to come out, because you could all play on the same Switch. And it would be perfect. You can play on the Switch, handheld, or you can play it on the TV, four player. That's what the Switch is made for. It would be perfect.
So that's it on the video game front and the board game front. Anything coming out for computer games or any other type of games? Any toy lines that are tied to gaming coming out? Or RPGs?
I know that we're getting a Lord of the Rings RPG book coming in the next couple weeks or so. I forget who made it, but it seemed pretty cool and it seemed pretty in-depth. I'm not sure if it's a reprint of something or... I'll double check when it comes in.
Okay, thank you. That'd be fantastic. I saw an Avatar role-playing game come out. I'm not a big Avatar fan, but
yeah.
I've heard from Avatar fans, and they're very enthused about their fandom. So when I saw the Avatar RPG, I thought, oh, wow, this is great for them. They could, without having to homebrew the role-playing game system, they can now use a role-playing game system was developed especially for them.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of that stuff actually from one of our distributors, and I looked into it too because our sales rep said that it was getting a decent amount of buzz around it, and there was a lot of products that came, out or are coming out for it, for launch. So it seems like it, has a good backing to it. I asked kind of around like our RPG people, and they didn't seem too, I said, oh, I kind of saw something about it, but didn't seem like our crowd was interested. So I passed on it. But like I said, there was a lot of stuff surprisingly. So hopefully it does pretty well. It's fun to see new things like that do well.
Yeah, yes, it is, especially since they offer, because most of the games that I run and all the games that I know of Even if they start with a particular system and remain faithful to it, more and more homebrewing gets attached to the game, you know, until you know, basically, again, it's a homebrewed game. And there are mechanics or information from other systems that we really love as we accumulate experience in gaming over the years. So we always find a way to integrate that into the campaign as well. So I'm sure that people who have magic-based systems that are focused on the elements, you know, would find a lot to adapt to whatever system they happen to be using.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what the base of it is, but I would assume it's some sort of D6 based kind of or D20 based kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about it, Zach?
I haven't really heard too much about it, but I also never watched or got into Avatar, so it hasn't really been on my radar.
Okay, yeah, I'm pretty much the same. If I hadn't seen this, I'd be oblivious. And I learned now from Tim that there's lots of products, not just the the role playing game. So that should be interesting to see how it develops. And Tim, I'd love for you to participate in the discussion about world building, because you've participated in a lot of different types of games, and I'm sure you have lots of really great ideas. I'll start with the introduction.
I can throw my hat in.
That would be fantastic. I rarely have ever like actually been a player in a role-playing game. I played countless NPCs, but I'm usually the dungeon master. The times I played, once I was Hercules in Marvel Super Heroes when the game first came out, and that was long, long time ago, I guess in the 70s or very early 80s. And then I played a barbarian a couple of times. And that was it. Those are the characters I've ever played as a player in role-playing game. The rest of my time has been spent developing worlds or evolving worlds or tweaking worlds for others to adventure in. And how I first start is by asking myself, like, what type of world would I like to hang out in and that other people might like to hang out in? Because what I like is not always what other people like. And sometimes I might think something's a phenomenal idea, and yet nobody wants to spend time exploring the universe I happen to be working on. So it starts with me, and then I see if I can generate interest in what I'm putting together. If it's not going to become a game that I'm running, it's research that I'm doing for myself so that it isn't wasted, the time that I put into it. And developing the game and researching something, there's a very big overlap. So I usually start with either a character whose world I like or a world that the type of characters that I like would be wandering in. Generally, for the most part, it would be Greek mythology and sword and sorcery, and sometimes historical type of scenarios. And with the Greek mythology, it could be ancient, it could be modern, or it could be futuristic. So in addition to the mythical aspects, sometimes I'll explore something from a superhero perspective. Right now, I've been running a Greek mythology campaign with anywhere between 1 and 3 sessions per month for the past 3 years or so. And I started running last year another session that is basically Greek mythology in outer space. And there's a tremendous amount of astral mythology or mythic astrology or, you know, whatever you want to call it, astronomy. All the constellations that are based on Greek mythology, there's an endless amount of information to draw from. And I've had kids of all ages playing in that, everything from little kids to much older kids. Those are the worlds I'm venturing in now. And fortunately, again, there's an endless amount of material that I could incorporate or get inspired by or tweak or modify. But it begins with the interest in and sometimes a dissatisfaction with the type of material that's out there. Like Jason and the Argonauts, I've run that since the 80s on and off. And I first started using a game called Heroes of Olympus. And they had a lot of really great stuff in there, and the whole game was geared towards Jason and the Argonauts in many ways, but not in the RPG part of it. So I took what I liked, and I mixed it with Tunnels and Trolls, which I liked a lot better, and Tunnels and Trolls gave you the option of going into solo books. And there was a solo book called Labyrinth, which was on Greek mythology, so that allowed me to have that. And then there were some other ones where, you know, they were easily adaptable to Greek mythology. And that served as the template for the Greek mythology. And again, I was happy with some aspects, not with others. I found some cool things in other games, tried those out. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. The things that worked became part of my homebrew, and on it goes. And back in the early or late, maybe 2000s, I had Crisis of Infinite Earths type of situations, where I'd been running games for decades, and the stories were so elaborate and complicated that I needed to simplify them. So we had the Time Wars, which is what we called it, and it took a year and a half, 2 years for the Time Wars to play out, and then we had a streamlined version of the decades that came after that. But just like DC and Marvel, I can't resist bringing old things back, so then I got into the whole multiverse thing, where there were multiverses and timelines, and you know, some things happen on one timeline and some on another, and you can cross them over and so forth. And I will speak at greater length on each of these parts, but that's a general overview of my world building. And from that, I'm going to go to Zach, who prepared for this. And I always like when Zach talks both in a prepared way and in an unprepared way. So I'll pass the baton to Zach.
Thank you very much. So we had discussed that the kind of topic that we wanted to address was the very beginnings of world building, you know, starting at the baby steps kind of thing, so that this can be something we build over time. So with that in mind, this is primarily about how to start and like how to find inspiration. One of my core beliefs when beginning the world building process is that it helps to start from a seed you already love. In my case, this tends to relate to my loves of myth and folklore, ancient Norse culture, ecology, and music. To give some practical examples, I run a fair amount of one-shot horror games. Rather than use commonly depicted monsters, I use these one-shots as a way for me to learn about the myths of a different region. If a specific place is calling to me, I'll then do research on it. If not, I'll randomly choose one and see what makes that place interesting. Previously, I did some research on various myths and monsters found in Chilean folklore for a game of Dread. On another occasion, my randomizer gave me Wyoming, a state I really knew next to nothing about. Both of these instances made the world building feel much less like work and more like play, since I was blending it with one of my hobbies. One of the things I think is most important to remember is that no matter how closely your world is based off of something, you should always be looking to interpret it through new eyes. In my Pokemon campaign, I designed a country based on Norway. In this world, the ancient Norse gods are seemingly real. In the traditional myths, Odin is terrified of the oncoming Ragnarok and makes many efforts to prevent it. But in my world, Vanakram, Odin did not give in to these fears. My vision of him instead has realized that every cycle must come to an end. Rather than trying to prevent the deaths of his kin and kingdom, he is instead focused on doing what he can to leave a legacy for the world he will not see. By changing something familiar, even in a small way like this, you can begin to craft a world that will be enticing for both you and your players to explore. There are no walls in place as limits on your imagination, so take care not to put them in place yourself. Going along with reinterpreting things, if you're designing something of your own, make sure to leave your fingerprints on it. They say that no story leaves us unchanged, but why shouldn't that apply the other way around as well? It's easier to invest yourself in the fictional world you're creating if pieces of it come from within you. Each of our histories is unique. If you examine the things that you've been through, the lessons you've learned, and the pains that you've suffered, how can you apply those experiences to your world? I have a mild fear of the ocean and deep water. As a result, many of my games will feature some reason for the players to experience that fear themselves. On the positive side of that coin, my favorite type of animals are birds. When populating a world, I'll usually try to create or feature at least one type of avian adversary. World building is similar to fiction writing. It's just that your audience and the way they interact with your story are different. The last core tenet to remember when setting out is that you are effectively setting a stage or scene rather than scripting one. You don't know how your players will interact with your world, no matter how much you plan or anticipate. A novelist is making their way to a set outcome. In much the same way, someone pruning a bonsai tree is capable of shaping the end result they desire. The world-building process will start the same as it would for a game, but is much more tightly controlled. When world-building for TTRPGs, do your best to think of your role as that of a gardener who has received a mixed bag of unknown seeds. Your work is the planting of these seeds, setting down their roots. Then you need to give them what they require to reveal what they will grow into. You can lay the groundwork, but you have little control over what will eventually come forth from those seeds. Trying to force them into an idealized design will only stifle and strangle the organic stories before they can bloom. Embrace that and lean into the idea that even you can be surprised by what fruits are born forth. In summary, my world-building beginner tips can be described with these four core tenets. 1, start from a subject or topic you already enjoy. 2, think on ways to change the familiar, even if only slightly. 3, use your personal experiences to shape your world. And 4, understand that you are handing your players a tool set, not a blueprint.
I like that. Very, very good. They're very powerful.
Thank you.
So they're part of the creation of the world, you know, rather than just the hapless beings that incarnate into it.
Yeah. And that's a big thing I do, I've been doing especially a lot in this campaign, is letting the players have more control over things like that. So we are currently in one of the players' hometowns. And so I've gone to them and said, okay, what kind of things do you picture from your character's upbringing in this town? Like, what kind of places would there be? What kind of people do you know? If we go there, did you have any NPCs that you would want to show up? And so, like, their parents currently live there, and for part of the session, they effectively kind of co-DM'd. They took over the role of their character's mom as, like, a DMPC to show the rest of the group around the city, and they had, like, what they called, like, a shopping episode where everybody was getting new clothes and stuff like that. But, you know, I think it's important to understand that it's a two-way street in the creation aspect. And obviously, if you're doing a one-shot, you're going to need to be a bit tighter. But if you're doing world-building for a game for a full-on world, you know, like, again, there are no walls in your imagination, but there also shouldn't be walls in your players. You should be open to being able to at least react to what they suggest, even if you don't always allow it. And it's one of my big things is I don't agree. I actually, and this might be controversial, I do not agree with yes and. I think that kind of steamrolls, that builds up too much momentum, that everything is always yes, everything is always exactly what they want. I prefer instead yes, but, and yes, if, so that there are consequences or costs to getting the things that they desire. And I think that leaves it a much more interesting play space for everybody.
Yeah, that does lead an interesting play space. Tim, you have played in Zach's games. So what do you have to say to these revelations?
Yeah, what he said at the very end is extremely true, where a lot of the times that we were playing, I noticed a few people were doing some yes and kind of things. And, you know, Zach, you know, it kind of pushed it along a little bit. But a lot of things are super true. And I use a lot of inspiration from both of you guys, actually. I've never run anything personally, but I've been looking at running that book that I got with that vinyl that I talked about previously, and I've done some, you know, very passive research and stuff, and using ideas that Zach, you actually talked about, in using monsters and stuff, using the not super familiar, because in the book, you know, they give you some things, but I was looking up, you know, some cool pirate myths and stories and stuff like that to go along with it. So, you know, it also brings your stuff in, Hercules, where you're pulling stuff from other areas where, oh, like, this is in the book, but yeah, I like it, but I like this other thing better. Let me use that. You know, take something and make it your own, and it's helpful for me to have that base, and then I can build off of that.
Wow. Thank you. And I will ask both of you a question. I'll share my thoughts as well. Sometimes things beyond your control kind of move a campaign idea along. I wanted to do something with Greek mythology in science fiction. So I couldn't find anybody interested in doing that. This was back in the 1980s. So I started putting it in the Marvel Universe, and nothing happened. Then I started putting other gods from the Marvel Universe into the idea, in this case, Thor and Asgard and Odin and so forth. And again, nothing happened. Then one day I was running a pre-vocational program, and I was sitting there with a book on Klingons. FASA had published it. And the response I got from people was, "Ooh, Klingons, that's awesome." And they started talking about the Klingons and Star Trek and things like that. And so I figured, why not? They're space barbarians. They're warriors. I'm sure there are mythical dimensions to the Klingons we don't know about. So I started putting together a Klingon game. And the Klingon game was very popular. I always had people want to do it and play Klingons. And I got schematics for a bird of prey so they had something to look at. I found a story from Marvel where Hercules was exiled into outer space. So that placed them there. And I had a Klingon warship, bird of prey, encountering Hercules, who's on a chariot, you know, flying through the firmaments. And that started a role-playing experience. It lasted for over 15 years and took place in, like, several different states. And it went from being a tabletop role-playing game to being like a fan club type of thing, where the role-playing game was part of it. That was like the stories we were telling, our episodes, as it were. But then it spread off into convention appearances, costume making, acting in the part of the costume, putting on, interacting with other clubs. And, you know, it started, we started a website. We had play by email games. And that was, again, that was just from ooh, Klingons, you know, and kind of went in that direction. Have you guys ever had a game idea, like, take a life of its own and steer you someplace where you never thought that you'd were going to go?
It's, funnily enough, the campaign I'm running right now, I'm running two parties. So one of them is in real life, one's online. And after we had our crossover event, which I had mentioned previously, to kind of ramp that up, because we didn't have bits where certain players, like certain characters, got to interact or have moments, I started setting up kind of a mini forum in our channel to, like, put these plot threads down for just little stuff while they were, like, recovering and helping rebuild the town and give them moments to interact and shine and do stuff. And it ended up, like, some of them, we look at the threads and it's like 450 messages in a week, you know, like, I just did another little just writing thing back and forth with one of them who, like, left the party for a bit, and that ended up being 30 pages. So,
oh, wow.
It's been something fun to get into, because I never really had that kind of push and pull with writing with players before. So it's been very interesting expanding to that and, like, letting us kind of play the game in downtime, you know, like when we're not actually playing through the game, we can still get these little stories done on the side. It's been very nice.
Right. I started something like that on Facebook. I used the concept of, like, a play-by-email game, and I wrote paragraphs, like, generally, and then gave people a certain number of days, you know, or a week. I don't remember. It was a few years ago, to respond. And then I rolled dice just to see, you know, how the stories went. I tweaked some of them or put complications in others or said that's a little bit fetched to include. So it evolved into a story, and there were like 35 episodes or sessions that we did with that one. It's still on the internet. I believe it's still on Facebook even. But yeah, that started off with being unable to get adults together. So I opened it up to adults who were on Facebook. Whoever wanted to play could play. And I put a ceiling of like 12 people because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to manage it. Tim, how about you?
It's cool. For me, it's more of like I didn't grow up doing like RPG stuff. I played video games and board games and stuff, but RPG stuff was always something that I looked at passively, but never did. I never really had the group to do it. So the journey of being able to play in Zach's games and doing that, and then hopefully eventually running my own at some point soon is pretty cool and something that I you know, that I wouldn't expect, you know, however many years ago, like, oh, I'm going to run my my first RPG. So it's pretty cool.
And one of the things I like to do is, and this has been mentioned by both of you, is again, connecting to things that are beyond the RPG, whether it's a particular author or a particular genre or a particular series of games to help build out the world. And I haven't relied on that for quite a while because kids don't read as much as they did, it seems. Like, I remember I used to give away books in Pennsylvania, and people would clamor for the books. And I tried a book giveaway program in New Jersey, and it really hasn't gone anywhere. I wind up donating a lot of the books that I had been gathering as giveaways for activities. One of the good things about knowing a lot of genres that your audience doesn't know is you can pretty much lift NPCs. Like I remember with the Klingon stories, I took NPCs from like comedy shows and just, you know, changed their name for the show, but it was like that actor was playing it, so I had to do impersonations, and it really brought NPCs to life. And I've been doing that lately with my new round of Greek in Outer Space. It's actors and characters that the kids don't know, but the personality of them goes into the show.
Yeah, it's helpful to have the base, and you know, it makes it fun to throw some spins onto some stuff.
Have you guys ever done that?
I lean more towards taking bits and pieces to make an NPC rather than like kind of like correlating them to a different universe. So I might say, oh, I like this character trait from this person in this book, but I like this character trait from this other character. What if there was a character that had both of those traits, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, we had at one point in a Conan campaign some of the characters from Saturday Night Live. And most of our players didn't watch Saturday Night Live. So we had a very we had Tommy Flanagan, who was married to Morgana the Fay, and Paul Lovitz played that character. So it was basically Paul Lovitz. Pee Wee Herman has popped up in different capacities over the years. And again, people don't know who these guys are mostly now because they haven't been really active. But they're great for having his non-player characters. I really beloved Barkeep. I patterned them after Classy Freddie Blassie, who's a wrestler. And a lot of people worked with the wrestler. His character was so great that, you know, he had to be in something. So he was in ancient Rome with a tavern. And I think his name was Oedipus Decimus. So I didn't really keep the names or use the names, like do something with the names. It just gave him a new name, and He said things as Oedipus Decimus that I'm sure Classy Freddie Blassie never said or would say. Do you guys plan your games in like chapters? Like I know when I'm putting together a game, I'll have like a beginning and end for a particular set of activities. And then of course, as they unfold, they reach tendrils into the future, sometimes immediately, sometimes a time will pass. Then all of a sudden, a consequence of what people did will pop up and enter the campaign again. But I have like chapters, like for instance, when I run the Voyage of the Argo, I have what happened before they went to test out for the Argonauts. You know, so were they in the cave of the Centaur Chiron? Were they princes or people in a local city or city state? And so I start there and develop a couple of stories just to cultivate the characters. Then I'll have like testing out for the Argo. That's usually in an arena. Hercules, Jason, and some of the other more famous Argonauts are there. And everyone's competing by racing, by throwing javelins, by shooting arrows and doing all sorts of stuff. They're given some sort of moral dilemma too, to see if they have the heroic spirit. And then the Argonaut voyage lasted for years, and some of my Argonaut voyages have lasted for years. So I have the chapters. Some things that are background material in the legends, I flesh them out like so many times where they seem like they should be part of the legend. But I follow that. And if I miss something for whatever reason, I do flashback episodes, you know, where like some minor event that all of a sudden fills in a gaping hole in the campaign. Sometimes I'll do the flashback episode with another group. So the information floats into the game, but not the actual experience itself, because we didn't experience that. So right now, the Argonauts are all in the pre-Argonaut phase. You know, they've heard about Jason. They've heard about his quest. They want to participate. They might not feel confident. The Centaurs might not feel that they're ready, you know, whatever reason. And so now they're building up the readiness stage in this new cycle of the Argonauts. And in the space one, the old characters that were played for quite a while became gods. So now they're having godly adventures in god realms, and these are their descendants or their avatars or the people who worship them, or, you know, so you have a brand new set of adventures. And right now they're still having the preliminary adventures to set up like who they are, what they're doing, and so forth. But I think very much in terms of chapters as I progress through time. How do you guys handle unfolding campaigns?
So in my current one, similar to the chapters idea, I have arcs is the way I've been describing them.
Okay.
So I made like a little pixel image of like an old runestone, like the kind they would have in Norway, like the big slabs of stone with the red ink runes on them. And they eventually translated it out of character, you know, and they were like, I don't know what this is, whatever. And so I explained, I said, these are the arc words. And so they know that these are the kind of six main arcs to the story I'm trying to tell. You know, and obviously their stories are mixed in and thread throughout. But so like right now we're still in arc one, because the way that I kind of like set up the story is arc one is the slowest arc, is the longest arc. As I mentioned earlier about wanting them to be able to create and add to things, this arc primarily focuses on that organic exploration and creation to get them attached, to get them to have places of refuge, people that they try to protect, and all these things that then when the knock on the door comes and the bad stuff gets here, they have natural reasons to want to stop it, rather than me just saying, you know, like, oh, okay, here's the bad thing, go do it. Like, I'm letting this one kind of, again, set the roots, to mention what I said earlier, and then see where it goes from there. But the six arc words, in case you guys were curious, are: the seas is arc one, the pyres is arc two, the ice is arc three, the trees is arc four, and though they think it's arcs five and six, arc five is actually the maggot and maw, and they think it's two separate ones. They don't realize it's the same one yet.
Are those metaphorical descriptions or literal descriptions, or both?
A little of both. They correlate to both kind of a theme of that arc, as well as the biggest threat of that arc. So, as it's arc one, and none of them listen to this, the seas, if you know your Norse mythology, your mind immediately went to one place. Jormungandr is going to be the kind of last stop in that arc. That's going to be the big threat at the end of that arc. And then defeating that will then lead the way to the next arc and so on down the line.
Awesome. Incredibly awesome. Tim?
For me, like I said, I haven't really had a chance to run anything, but the one that I have been preparing a little bit, it has helped to have, some sort of little chapters in my head about, like little story beats that I would want to hit, and, with the help of the book, a few things as well. But, one of the things that Zach taught me was, don't have anything super rigid. You might have an idea, but, the characters might end up doing something else, which is totally fine. So you have to be a little bit more free-flowing with it. So like I said, I have a few, story beats in mind that are different than the book, but also a couple things, from the book as well.
Do you then relate it back to the book and say that the book was reported wrong? I've done that. Or the movie that inspired me, that was the work of a bard who embellished the story or pointed in a particular direction for purposes of politics or whatever. You're portraying the true version of events. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to spin it. Yeah.
How about you, Zach?
The ancient tomes were incorrect for possible nefarious reasons.
Yeah, I also have to meet people who they know from books or stories, and the people that they meet are very different from what they expected the person to be like. Time travel stories work well with that type of premise in mind, because we tell stories. The word history means stories, and we've known for since Herodotus, at least, that stories can be corrupted. Stories can portray reality in a way that it contradicts what most people's judgment of what happened would be. And it's still happening today.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Still very, very important.
I got to play with that a little bit recently. I mentioned those kind of like write-ups that we've been doing, like the little text RPs and everything. So one of the things I think I've mentioned once or twice on here is me and my friend John have a habit of kind of rewriting the lyrics to songs to be funny. We'll keep the beat the same, syllable for syllable, try and make the lines like match up. And so after they kind of defeated this big evil, I wrote two songs, one that basically highlighted the old gods, which Party One worships, as being the saviors of the scenario. And the other one that paints the new gods that Party Two worship as the heroes of the scenario. And so now that they're beginning to resume travel after this event, they're starting to come across these bards that are telling these variations on the story because they weren't there. They've heard the story from someone who heard the story, and they're like putting their own spins on it. One of them, they were at one point, Party One was led into the desert by a madman scavenger who'd lived there for decades, sacrificing travelers to a giant dinosaur. I was like, there'd always be that one person who's like, oh, I really liked the story that they told last night at the bar, but that one character seemed really underdeveloped. So then I wrote a third song that said that desert madman is the sole person who solved the issue, even though he was tangentially attached to it at best.
We have time, I think, for one more question. We have 6 minutes. Do you use maps and miniatures? I'm a big believer in maps and miniatures. I have so many of them. I have like clear plastic bins full of them. Now I have to limit. They have to tell me at the end of the session where they want to go. And then if I didn't bring a map for that, we do it in Theater of the Mind. Do you guys use maps and miniatures and props?
Yeah, I got more into the miniatures with this most recent real-life campaign that I had made a map of the country and surrounding waters, and so I kind of got that printed on a playmat so that we had like a nice high quality version of the map, so we can mark like, oh, okay, you guys are currently here, like here's where you're traveling to. I always put it in the middle of the table, like when we're playing in person. This system is particularly crunchy is the best way to put it. so having a battle map for combat helps very, very much.
Okay, and Tim?
For me, I definitely plan on having a printout of a ship with some minis. From the store, I actually have quite a few little minis that would be really good, some water elementals and stuff. But, yeah, I definitely like it helps with the visual aspect of it, too. So it gives you a reference point to base some stuff off of.
You're not carrying minis? That is awesome. I need to. I tried dropping by a couple times over the past few months, but I keep missing you.
Yeah. Sorry.
I got to make an appointment.
The minis are more just stuff that people have gifted and left behind, or cool little things that I saw.
This Saturday I might be in the area. Are you around this Saturday?
Yep, probably there this Saturday. We'll be doing our Pokemon League, so hopefully there'll be some people there for that.
So hopefully I will see you, and hopefully the store is really busy, but we can at least exchange some words. And we're running out of time. I would like to thank you for being here. I'll let you guys come up with the topics we'll talk about for world building next time. And I look forward to making that like a monthly and evolving. And I have some ideas in mind, which I'll discuss with you offline.
Yeah, that sounds fun. This is a lot of fun tonight.
And I want to start also talking to the authors of games. We have somebody in the wings. We have two more, but I seem to have lost contact with them. So I will try to get them back in so that we can do that every month as well.
Yeah, it would be that'd be fun to be able to pick some brains or some ideas.
I want to thank you both. You're both incredibly awesome. I'm very fortunate that our paths have crossed and that we have an adventure that we go on monthly together. I wish you both the greatest of success in gaming and all your other endeavors, and I look forward to our next session. Thank you.
Thank you, as always.
Thank you very much. Wonderful catching up. Thank you very much.
And thanks to our wonderful listeners, whether you clicked on a link and you found yourself here with us, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, guys.
Have a great night.
Thank you very much. Have a good rest of the night.
You too. Bye-bye.